there were deals I would lose right at a younger age because I wanted the higher paycheck or whatever it was. And from those trials and tribulations, right, when I've actually taken care of my buyers or sellers in a better manner, truly speaking from a place of their interest over mine, just trying to close the deal or whatever it might be, the dividends are just massive, man, that you receive after. You know, so my faith is really, I think, what changed my business, right, in the best way, right, and helped me sleep at night, you know, because, you know, people rely on your intuition and your guidance, right? And so if you don't do it the right way, man, it's, you know, it's really harmful to these people.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mark Dolan. I am the host of Time Tested Mastery, Life Lessons Sell, the podcast for real estate agents and people committed to personal development, sharing time-tested principles that I learned over my 40-year career. Today, I want to introduce my guest, Nick LeBrate, who is a newer agent to the business. I should say that because he's newer than me. After 42 years in the business for myself, he impresses me of the kind of dedication that young people need to bring to this business to become top producing professionals. I've watched Nick over the last few years working on a team, learning the business, developing his skills, and putting together a tremendous work ethic that has paid off. And now he's gone off and created his own group. So I'm excited to have him share with all of you today a little bit about his journey, his background, the lessons that he's learned, and where he's hoping to take his business in the future. So with that, I want to welcome you to the show, Nick.
Hey, Mark. Thanks so much, man. It's a pleasure to be here. And, you know, it's kind of funny. It feels full circle, man. It's, you know, I jumped in this business going on 8-9 years ago or so, I'd say now. And I just remember talking with John, and, you know, you guys were the OGs, man, paving the way for all of us, first getting into it and showing us what can be done, you know, and the achievements if you really put yourself into it. So excited to be here and just have a conversation with you and hang out. And thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, awesome. So you're a young man, and one of the questions that I like to ask people, what was your youth like? I mean, were you aspiring to be a real estate agent as a kid? I mean, when did that idea come to you? What were you doing, and what inspired you to get into real estate?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. There was nothing on the radar for real estate. So, how I grew up, man, it was awesome. I was the youngest of seven, still am, right? Six boys, one girl.
Yeah.
Pops is 100% Sicilian. He's a stubborn man. So we grew up a very, like to say, systematic way, right? Routine, you know, just very particular, filled with lots of love, right? I do not want to miss that. You know, my parents were amazing. They still are great people. But we grew up with a different background. It was construction. My dad grew up building homes. And so he gave us two options, right? We're, you know, going to learn a trade or we're going to go to college. And a lot of us chose the trade, of course, left and tried to play a little bit of college ball and did some stuff, but never, ever thought real estate was a thing, and tried playing some college ball down at a JUCO in East LA, right? And I was 20 years old. I was really enjoying it, to be honest with you.
Right.
Easy to say I wasn't a 1%er in athletes athletics. But my dad had a stroke, and so I came back home. Decided to help back at the business with him. And at the time, just felt really lost, right? Partying, right? I was 20 years old, and I was in and out of filling the voids with the temporary relief, right? And for me, you know, if I can end this podcast with one thing, know my faith is really strong, right? And so
sure.
I was walking this line of lukewarm, right? Trying to be a good person, but still dancing with the wrong things. And when I came back after my dad had that stroke, I was living in Redlands, and John, you know, mentor, which I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, quite a bit here in the podcast, John Carmody, he said, dude, just try to get your license, you know? And I was like, man, I don't think so, man. I grew up swinging a hammer, you know what I mean? And playing football and wrestling. And I don't know if I could be in the office. You know, I was, my thought process of real estate was sitting behind a desk all day, and I was just anti it, right? But I said, you know, what do I have to lose right now? You know, and I was really praying a lot. I was just looking for answers, some sort of direction and guidance in my life, right? Little do I know, or did I know at the time, that it was real estate. That's what started to shape me. And so anyways, at 20, I just made a commitment to myself, you know, at the time, you know, I was with my wife at the time, she was my girlfriend. And I needed to be a better person, right? And I felt it in my spirit. I just needed a change. And so I said, let me just try the real estate thing. Let's just see what happens. So I committed a fair amount of time, got my license when I was 20, and absolutely some ups and downs, right? But in the last 8.5 years, it's been history, and I really fell in love with it and feel really blessed that I just kind of took the leap.
I'm glad that we're having this conversation, because as much as the time that I've known you, I've never learned that about your history. So I'm grateful to hear that. Reminds me of me at 20. You know, I was partying, having a good time, wasn't thinking about real estate. I think I got my license at 21. So you got your license at 20 or 21? 20. So you're an overachiever, baby. I remember when I first started, man, people would look at me when they'd walk in the office and they'd look over my shoulder and they'd say, hey, is your dad here? We'd like to buy a house, oh, yeah, kind of thing. So I didn't have a whole lot of credibility starting out in the beginning, and didn't have a whole lot of skills, but I had that hunger and that drive. And it sounds like you had that. You got that from your dad?
Yeah, I'd like to give all the credit to him, right? I think the success of my business comes from, you know, my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. There's no doubt in that. But my work ethic, yeah, I'd say comes from him. I mean, I always tell my clients this, right? And I think it was from a battle of the same thing, Mark, with the credibility side of it, right? Being in this business at a younger age, right? Because at the end of the day, this is somebody's biggest financial decision, right? Whether buying or selling in their life, it's massive. And so they need to feel like they're well taken care of. And when you're younger, that definitely brings some obstacles in here. But I think I had some confidence, and reason being, I remember, you know, sixth grade came around and all my friends started showing up with flip phones, right? And their parents bought them phones. And it's like, Dad, I really want a phone. And he's like, yeah, you're not getting a phone. You know, it's just not, you're too young. And so I remember in the bottom of his office drawer, he had like an old just drawer full of like Nokias that didn't work. So I took a Nokia out of there, got it to turn on. And I took it to school and told my friends I had a phone, and it was fake, right? Or it wasn't fake, but it just didn't work. And everyone's making phone calls to their parents. So I'm doing fake phone calls. And long story short, my dad was like, just go get a phone. I said, well, Dad, I don't know how to do that. You know, I'm literally 10, 11 years old. He's like, well, start splitting wood in the back and I'll pay you $5 an hour. And so I did the math. I needed $80 for a prepaid phone. It was $60 a month, so 12 hours a month, to get a card that would give me unlimited texting and data and 1,000 minutes a month. And so starting in sixth grade, I mean, he had us working for things, right? It was our phone, and then it went to name brand clothes, right? Because I wanted the cool clothes and not just the bare necessities. And you know, at the time, I think I was frustrated, right? As a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, I think I was naturally, right? Just, why do I have to do this? Why don't I just get a box for me, right? And, you know, I look back now on it and so grateful for it, right? I see what my dad was doing. He always said he would never be my best friend, right? He would always just be my dad, right? And I don't know if it was a matter if he could afford it or not, but the lessons that it taught us, right? And the character it gave us was invaluable. And I feel like when it was 18 and we got kicked out of the house, it was my time to go. I wasn't stressing at all, because by that point I was paying phone bill, car bill, you know, registration, insurance, you know, a fair amount of things collectively. And so got kicked off. So I think I brought that same thing into the real estate world, right? Just finding something to do, you know?
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, that is, you know, that is amazing, you know, that you share that. I mean, what I'm hearing, you know, as you make that description, is that you were willing to do the work from a young age. I mean, that's pretty clear. I mean, if you're willing to go out and split wood because you want a phone, I mean, I have a couple of daughters that, that worked all the way through high school in order to pay for some of their college education. You know, we made our kids, you know, earn some of their way, you know, going forward. I mean, obviously we were there, you know, trying to support them, but, you know, that's great parenting, you know, to support you along the way and, you know, help you to solve problems. It sounds like you were a problem solver from the very beginning. I want a phone. That's a problem. I need to figure out a way to get it. And you followed through with that.
Sure.
Yeah. Awesome. So, and I think the second thing that I heard there, and I know that you're a man of faith. I'm a man of faith, and I think that we probably read different versions of the Bible. You know, in the Catholic Bible, they have a book called Sirach that is not in some of the Protestant Bibles, but the book is written from a father writing proverbs or advice to his son. And I'm currently going through that book in the morning. And so as you're describing that, I mean, it makes a connection with faith. You know, that scripture gives us so much wisdom that we can apply to our lives. And I know that you have done that.
Yeah, absolutely, Mark. My I think my whole business pivoted when I really brought, you know, the center of it to my faith, right? I think been a believer ever since a young age, right? That was my dad's teaching to us is, you know, always say your prayer right before you go on any sort of trial. Ask him to hold your hand, right? Do all the things. But I think for me, it was just kind of floating through. And then in my business, I started realizing we have to be at service, right, to these people. And you know better than I in this business, there's a lot of agents that can be malicious, right? This business is, it's interesting at times, and it takes a lot of honesty and integrity to uphold a well foundation or a, you know, well business. And, you know, my faith, when I put that at the center and decided to put others just over mine, right, and have a motto, you know, connections over commissions, I watched my business skyrocket, and it was all just because of the Lord, right? I really wanted to serve his people. And, you know, I remember there were deals I would lose, right, at a younger age because I wanted the higher paycheck or whatever it was. And from those trials and tribulations, right, when I've actually taken care of my buyers or sellers in a better manner, truly speaking from a place of their interest over mine, just trying to close the deal or whatever it might be, the dividends are just massive, man, that you receive after. You know, so my faith is really, I think, what changed my business, right, in the best way, right, and helped me sleep at night, you know, because, you know, people rely on your intuition and your guidance, right? And so if you don't do it the right way, man, it's, you know, it's really harmful to these people.
So when you first got your license at 20, did you make the decision to have God lead your business from the very beginning, or did that happen a little bit later?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, to answer that appropriately, I think I was naive, right? Meaning that I don't even know if I asked myself that question, right? Who's going to run this business? And I think it's, you have two options, right? It's the Lord or it's the world. And at 20 years old, right, I was in a place of, how do I say it, man? I was in a place of, I don't want to say I was desperate, but I was yearning for change, right? I was yearning for something new, for fulfillment, right? Which was the Lord. I just didn't know it at the time. And so I think maybe I thought money or monetary gain would change that. I think when you're young and just in any humane nature, you think money will fix a lot of things. And so, although I don't think I was malicious towards any clients, I think your head is just like, what is Nick's needs right now, right? Versus what are my clients' needs? And right. So I just think as I gained spiritual maturity and went through more trials and tribulations, right, and started to actually understand what our faith means on a deeper level, and having that trust in the Lord, right? Knowing that he's always going to work for our good. That transition, I think, happened a little bit later, right? I think in the business, mostly because I think it just takes time and error, right? Trial and error, right? It takes time to be seasoned and have that trust in the business. So I think at the beginning, just more a lack of being naive to it.
Yeah. Well, and I think I want to stop just for a second and, you know, let everybody that is a listener today, you know, whether you're 20 starting in the business or whether you're 30, or whether you're 62 like I am today, you know, we have a long lifetime in order to get it right. I mean, it takes a long time to, you know, I used to tell people I was a juvenile delinquent. I mean, I hate to say that now. I'm not proud of it. But, you know, one of the things that happens is that we continue to grow, and hopefully we continue to grow even after we get to the point where, you know, we've turned our life over to God, and because he can continue to mold us and use us for even greater things. But I want to go back to when you first started, because this will be valuable for people that are either just starting in the business or contemplating getting in the business. And I know that you became, you know, part of a team. You were working with John Carmody, who is now your father-in-law. So, you know, share what your business, what did you start out doing?
Yeah, great question again. Yeah, I jumped in with Johnny, man, and he, at the time, he had like a small little team, a couple agents. You know, John, he wasn't huge on the team thing. I was just really blessed because I was in the family, and, you know, he didn't have an option but to help me out. No, he loved to do it. But it was very, I like to say John was very old school, and I appreciated that aspect of John because I always believed just hard work works, right? And so he kind of taught me a way of the business to... it's kind of like that motto, you know, you give a man a fish, they'll eat once, but you teach a man how to fish and they'll eat forever, right? And I think John taught me these foundations in this business that solidified opportunity, right? If I can stick to the plan here. And it wasn't buying leads from these companies, right? It wasn't, you know, the gain through the monetary side, it was, hey, go show up, Nick. And what did that look like? Well, it was getting on the phones first and foremost, which, you know, was so intimidating. It still is to this day, don't get me wrong. But at the beginning level, it was, man, it freaked me out. And I think that really made me grow a lot, right? But it was beat on the phones an hour a day. It was grinding out 1,000 mailers a week. It was contacting my sphere of influence, which was almost equally as intimidating as cold calling, because again, I was 20, right? And contacting my teachers or my parents' friends or whoever was 40 and 50 and 60, again, it was a little 20-year-old saying, hey, let me delegate your home buying or selling process. And that's asking a lot, right? So really just doing the things that most people don't want to do. He said, go do them and watch it work out, you know? And the showing up part, you know, I was blessed to get taught that early, right? So showing up was one thing, but just sticking to it, you know, and John was great on me, you know, just telling me it's a numbers game, right? Just show up, you know, be consistent. Don't close the door too soon. And so blessed to have him in my corner on all that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that sounds a lot like what it was like when I started, you know, 42 years ago. You know, I mentioned, you know, people were looking for my dad, but you know, the beautiful thing about starting at 20 is I started my business on the phone like you did. And 40 years ago, you know, there was no internet and there was no Zoom. You know, there were no, I think there were answering machines, but there were no cell phones. People were home. And I did almost exclusively all of my business, my successful business in the very beginning on the phone, because the people couldn't tell that I was, you know, 21 years old. And sure. So everything that I did from a sales standpoint was based on the way that I communicated with them. They weren't looking at the kid that smoked and was still drinking and doing some other things like that. They were listening to the message. And so I learned a lot of those skills. But it's the hard work. And there's so many people I know that believe, well, I'm too young to do it and I can't. And you and I are both living proof that that's not true. It's not easy, sure. But when you say, I can't do it, and you don't try, then you're guaranteed not to do it, if that makes sense. And so you're an example of somebody that went out and did it. And thank heaven you had a mentor right from the very start. Yeah, I didn't get my mentor until I started working with Tim Wood. And I had already been in the business struggling for about 4 or 5 years before I started working with him.
Sure.
So when you think back to, you know, starting out with John and you had that direction going and, you know, basically you started on blind faith, I guess is what you're saying. John says, go do this and watch the results. And so you followed the direction and did it.
Yep.
When did you see signs that it was working?
Signs that it was working. You know, I mean, I have this moment that this will never leave. You know, my first, it's kind of a compacted question here. So I'm going to unload a little bit on you here. But my first 2 years were 6 to 8 million a year in volume. And, I felt really blessed because it was a big change from my $10 an hour labor being a contractor, right? Working for my dad, but I always wanted more. And at the time it was definitely more material, financial, whatever it was. And 2 years in, I remember I have another great mentor, Kevin, and I called him and I said, or I shot him a text and I said, hey man, I just, you know, at the end of the year, Mark, a little backstory. Every December-ish, November, December, I'll always try to recap the year. I'll check in with some of my mentors. I'll try to, you know, try to be better for the next upcoming year. And so I was kind of doing that. And I reached out to Kevin as another mentor I have. And I said, dude, I want to double down. What do I do? And he said, dude, what do you really believe, right? What do you really believe in yourself that you're worth, number one, and two, that you deserve? I guess that's the same thing in the end of it. He's like, do you think you're worth $500,000 a year? I said, no, not yet. I don't. I said, but I do think I'm worth six figures, right? He's like, well, why do you think that? And I said, because I show up, man. I show up. I'm doing this 7 days a week. You know, I'm up by 4:30 Monday through Friday, doing my spiritual work, going to the gym, like working on myself, and I can take care of my clients, right? I believe that, man. And I truly do think I'm worth that. And he's like, okay, well, now that you believe it and you understand why you are, have that intention going in every day, right? And double down your numbers one more time, right? So if you're doing an hour a day, go to 2 hours a day on your cold calling. If you're doing 50 mailers a day, do 100 mailers a day, right? So on top of action, also have that belief that backs it, right? He's like, and the reason that's important is because if you believe in yourself, your clients are going to hear that on the other end of the phone, right? When you're in the booth or when you're negotiating a deal, right? They're going to hear the belief that you have in yourself and it's going to transpire in a deal, right? And so things will start accumulating. And that phone call really pivoted everything, Mark. I started believing in myself in a different manner because I was the person that I was talking about, right? It wasn't that I was just saying that I deserve these things. I was showing up, right? And I had a good track record of saying I'm showing up. And it was when that switch flipped that a lot of things started going north, right? And really going in a positive direction in the business. And it went from an $8 million a year to, I think, $26 million or something in a year. And it was just like literally life-changing in one matter. And the work really didn't change because, again, I was already showing up, right? I was putting in the hours. I just think it was that mental state, you know, of believing in myself, you know, like that saying, if you believe you can or you believe you can't, both are normally right, you know, right? So it really is a big factor in there is your belief.
You know, I'm going to share this story, and I don't know if you've heard this story before, but I've shared it many times. The first year that I worked with Tim Wood, my mentor, I think I made $18,000. I did 11 closed deals. It was the year of the earthquake in Big Bear back in 1992. And I had just started working for him and, you know, was being now introduced to all kinds of life-changing ideas, you know, like you're talking about having a mentor and a coach. And I remember, you know, listening to Jim Rohn, and he said, you know, you attract the people, the place, and the circumstances into your life by the person you become. And he also says that we're paid for the value we bring to the marketplace. And so I'd made $18,000. And Tim asked me at our year-end goals, he said, so, you know, what are your goals for the next year? And I said, I want to earn $100,000. And his jaw hit the desk. His jaw hit the desk. And he looked at me and he said, well, you know, how the hell do you plan on doing that? And I said, you know, I'm going to show up like you're talking about. I'm going to show up. I'm going to be there to help the clients do what they need to be done. I'm going to be pleasant to do business with. I'm going to tell people the truth. And I'm going to be there. I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to provide that value. And somebody, I don't know who, but somebody will pay me. And the next year I made $93,000. I'd never made anything close to that. I mean, I made three times what I had ever made, you know, prior to that. So it sounds like there's similarities, you know, from my standpoint, you know, for high top achievers. They don't start there, but they do the work, and somehow, some way, God will continue to develop them and make them blossom. Like, I think that's a powerful message. You're a living example of that.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think there's something about just continuing to show up, right? I think something else I tell myself, you know, I think we live in a pretty crazy world, right? And we have social media nowadays, so it's so distracting, and everything can be so overwhelming, right? Trying to be better. And I always tell myself, man, just 1% better, right? Today, if I can be 1% better, whether that's spiritually, emotionally, physically, financially, whatever it is, just make a right step in the right movement. And I always think of it like a snowflake, right? That lands and it turns into a snowball and it starts rolling down a hill, and those little movements will accumulate into massive impact. And so just little by little, right? I think continuing to show up, you know, day in, day out, and the harder you work, the luckier you get, right? The Lord will also, you know, bless along those roads.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I'm thinking back, you know, I was thinking about this earlier, is that, you know, I've been the broker for the firm for quite a lot of years, and people do call when they need help from time to time, and you rarely call for help. You call when it's appropriate. But, you know, when there's something going on, you'll call and say, hey, I've got this going on. You know, what do we necessarily need to do here? But I think the difference between you and many people is that you seem to take responsibility for solving a lot of your own. You're dedicated to do that. You're dedicated to solving the problems and being the solution. Where did that come from?
Another good question. I think, you know, I'm led to believe where it came from was, you know, how I was brought up, you know. There's just always a solution for everything. You just have to find it. I think just staying composed too, especially in a business like this, the worst thing we can do is get, you know, erratic on an emotional level, because nobody responds well to that. And we are problem solvers, right? We're hired to hold our clients' hands through the deal, right? And on a professional level. And you know, I think when you're faced with things you want in life so bad and you're not just handed them, right, you're built that trait. I don't think it's, I always say I'm just a very ordinary person that just likes to show up and find new ways of, you know, connecting dots. And, you know, John 2 always has a saying, doing something equals something, right? And so, you know, I was telling a friend of mine that owns a management company up here, you know, when you're faced with things in these kind of businesses, right, you know, the first thing we all want to do is just get frustrated, right? But if, and we always will have these rapid thoughts of what might happen, right? What ifs here, and, you know, it's anxiety, right? Thinking of something that might not even happen. And if you just slow things down for 3-4 hours, like John would always say, just take the drama out of the deals, right? Take the emotions out of it and let it play out. Half of the problems or the scenarios you thought of ahead of time didn't even come to fruition, right? And so I think the problem solving also just comes from just slowing things down, right? And just, you know, being calm and just knowing there's a solution, right? Everything's been fixed. I mean, that's why we're here. You know, I think there's always solutions out there. You know, and so I just think it was taught young, you know, at a young age for me.
Yeah. And as you talk about that, one of the things that I share in, you know, the training, you know, that I do with people, bend the iron while it's hot is a phrase. So when you're closing a sale and the momentum is moving forward to close a deal, I say bend the iron while it's hot. When you're having positive momentum pushing forward, it's usually better to try and wrap it up then. So if I can wrap up a deal in the next hour or by the end of the day, if it's moving in the right direction, I will do everything I can to close that transaction and get all the T's crossed and the I's dotted in order to get it done. But when there's resistance in a transaction, and I think this is what I heard you say there, when there's resistance or there's a problem or where there's drama, you know, step back, you know, let the problem, you know, simmer down, you know, let the fire and the drama. Because if you try and close a deal that where there's a lot of controversy, you know, like right now, we have to solve this right now. Everybody's fighting. And if mm-hmm. you give them, you know, a few hours or if you give them a day, you know, a lot of that fight goes out of it. And then you can come back to a solution. So that's pretty wise advice, you know, to let things slow down and simmer a little bit. I want to change gears a little bit with you. With the production and with the things that you're doing, can you share sort of what your perfect day is like? You know, when does it start? What are the activities that you do? And I know like the numbers, you know, the numbers might not be the same for everybody else, but it's the structure that I'm looking for. And it's, so what are the activities that are you doing to fuel your business? But also, what are you doing to fuel yourself physically and your faith as well?
Yeah, I love this question. Because I really believe that the success starts early in the morning, right? I think it's so important to take care of yourself, right, in order to run a successful business. Because if you're not taking care of yourself, your clients aren't going to get the service, right? So my perfect day, and I say that lightly because perfect doesn't happen, right? But if I'm on a good track here and I do have my day designed how I would like, it's up somewhere around 4:30-ish. And I usually will start with like a daily devotional, my prayer, and I'll spend a little time in the word, do a little stretching, and then I'll hit the gym about 5:30-ish, 5:15, 5:30, spend an hour in there, right? And then I come home and it's 6:30, have a cup of coffee before my little one wakes up. And from 7:30 until about 9, I get to hang out with him, right? And he fuels me, charges my battery. That's like my me time. And then I show up to work absolutely on fire, right? Because when you do those things, you feel good. You already have little wins, you know, starting from 4:30 in the morning. And then my 9 to 9:30 just looks like easing in, right? Emails, follow-up texts, phone calls, and then get real intentional about 9:30, 10 with some sort of marketing, whether that's cold calling or prospecting, whether that's cold calling or mailers, Sphere, social media, whatever that looks like. And so I'll do 2 a day, right? I'll do some sort of mailers, and then I try to do an hour a day on the phones as well. And especially the days I don't want to, I get in there. And then by 1:00, my day's normally freed up, meaning that I always save appointments for the afternoon and my mornings are just consistent. It's like a system, right? So by 1, I could do any appointment I need to do. And I also got my morning in of prospecting. And why is that important? Well, because I realized early on, if you're not consistent, this business has a roller coaster to it, right? You have 5 deals going, you close them, you have none for 2 months, right? It was never consistent for me. And I said, well, how do I beat that? And when I have 5 deals going, I'll work like I have 0, right? And when I have zero, I still work like I have zero. So it never changes. Well, it will. But in my mornings never try to change, especially Monday through Thursday, right? Friday, I reward myself and normally I'll work from home, hang out with the kiddo, and the family. And that's like a nice treat for me. But that's usually what it tries to look like. You know, of course, if I have appointments I have to do in the mornings, I will. But it's very important for me to, you know, my 5 a.m. until really 1 looks the same every day. You know, it's very systematic.
How long have you been working that schedule?
Consistently, I'd say three to four years now. Was this 20? I'd say since 2020, actually. So yeah, 4 or 5 years, we'll call it. Consistently. Yeah. I've always tried to do that. But I just wasn't, I didn't have my priorities straight. I wasn't going to bed early enough. Like I said, when I was younger, you know, there's things I couldn't do to sustain the schedule. Or just discipline, I guess. Right. It's relatively easy to sustain, but you know, I'd say 4 or 5 years was celerity to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, so there's some powerful, you know, there's some powerful things that you talked about in there that are time-tested principles. One is consistency over time. I mean, the compounding of money, everybody seems to be familiar with the compounding of money. If you save over time, the longer you have it saved, the more it grows. Well, it's the same thing with consistent effort. I know when I talk with new salespeople a lot, I will give them a 6-hour work day. I'll say, you know, this is what I want you to do for 6 hours a day, and I want you to do it every day. I don't want you to necessarily work more than that. You can add your appointments when you start having appointments after the 6 hours, but do the 6 hours every single day. And, you know, a lot of times I'll get people that will say, you know, after 30 days, you know, I want to quit, this business sucks. And I say, why? And they go, you know, I've been working my tail off. I've been working 12 hours a day. I'm working, doing this and doing that, and nothing's happening for me. Everybody else is sitting around the office is making money, but not me. And I said, who told you to work 12 hours a day and burn out? I said, do this 6 hours a day. I need you to do this 6 hours a day for 18 months to get the results that we're after. I don't need you to work for, you know, for 30 days and quit. That's not going to work. So that was one point that you made that was really good. The second one was that you've done it for 5 years. You've done it for 5 years. Percentage wise, what was your, if you were to take your income over the last 2 years and compare it to your first 2 years, what would be the difference percentage wise? I mean, don't give me a dollar amount, but give me a percentage.
Sure. Percentage wise, I mean, like a 300% growth almost. I mean, you know, from, I could give you a sales volume, no problem sharing that. I mean, I was selling consistently 6 to 8 million a year for the first two while being on a team, right? So all the agents that watch this, they know the splits, you know, and then you go, I've been solo about 18 months now, as I'll say, right around there. And so let's say the last 2 years, I mean, I'll be closing on average, you know, this year I'm almost at, Lord willing, 25 million this year. That's an increase of 5 times, right, in sales volume.
Yeah.
You know, just from, I think, you know, the self, like you said, just staying consistent, man.
Yeah. And so here's the point that I want to make. Do you have any more hours in the day today than you did when you first started?
Absolutely not.
No.
In so fact, it's less, probably.
It's the accumulation effect, you know, of doing the right things and letting yourself grow over the time. You know, doing the right things and allowing time to help you grow. That is absolutely a wonderful success story. I think it should be inspiring for a lot of people. It might also be intimidating because you've not been shy that it has been work.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing to tap on too, Mark, is, you know, and this is very important to me, which is why I want to share it. You know, number one, it's my faith, like I said. Number two, you got to have a why, right? And you got to have a reason you're showing up because, you know, humans will burn out naturally. I think, I don't care who you are. I think it'll happen, right? Unless you really have a strong why and, you know, find a deeper reason than yourself. You know what I mean? And I firmly have that. And I think that's why it's easy to get up every day. You know what I mean? And I think that's important for people to get out of this message too, right? Know why you're doing it. And if you don't have passion for it, it might be also wise to pivot, you know, because the time on this earth is valuable, you know, and it's not worth sticking something out if it's, you know, if it's not bringing you any joy, right? Because I believe you could be successful at anything you do if you have the right heart at it.
Yeah. Beautiful. So before we wrap things up, share with everybody, you know, what you aspire to do in the next 5 years.
Next 5 years, man. Be a better husband and a better father to start. That's hands down number one. And number two, I'm sure a lot of this will be business orientated. I really want to double down, right? And double everything I'm doing. I got a real steep goal of 50 million in 1 year as far as sales volume. And I think there's an absolute way to get there. And I'm working on the blueprint now. I just try to change intentions, right? I'm going to go heavy in the luxury market, Lord willing, putting it out there now, right? So that's getting vulnerable. Right. But I really want to really double down my systems. I'm using other resources to free up my time where I can get intentional in the business, right? And I go back to what I always say, connect dots, right? I want to find exactly what my buyers want. I want to double in deals. You know, I want to help sellers that, you know, are looking for unique ways of getting things done. I want to get beyond just the day-to-day in the business, right? I really want to level up, you know, be a better agent, just in every aspect. That's kind of where I'm at, man. Be a better person, right? Better agent, sell more, help more people. And, just keep running.
Yeah. Well, Nick, I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that you're going to be able to achieve it because you're on the right path and you're continuing to move. Share with everyone how they can reach you, because there's going to be agents that are out there that might have questions for you. And hopefully there's also people that want to do business with you as well, knowing how committed you are to providing that kind of service and level of commitment to the business. So how can they reach you?
Sure. I think everyone has my number and my email. I'm sure you can, you know, I'm sure it'll be on this, and my Instagram's on there, just Nick LeBate. But absolutely happy to help, you know, anybody that has questions. I love sharing with agents, you know, the day-to-day prospecting I do. I believe there's an abundance out there for everybody. So absolutely reach out if anybody has questions, and we can connect and, you know, inspire each other. I think that's important too, to, you know, stay as a group here and just keep moving up.
Well, I want to thank you for joining me today, Nick. It has been an absolute pleasure. I've been watching you since you started your business. And I have to tell you, you're one of the most impressive young men that I have watched in the business for quite a while. And, you know, I don't say that to flatter you, but, you know, it's heartfelt because I've been watching the business that you do. And so for all of you that are listening today that are just starting out in the business or want to level up your business, success leaves clues. And when I say that, success leaves clues. You can't do the right thing over time and not get the right results coming back to you. And that's what we're here talking about at Time-Tested Mastery on this podcast and in my coaching business, is to teach you the principles that I was taught by my mentor and by so many success-oriented people to help me grow my business to achieve the dreams that I want to. And so I share this with a lot of people as I close my talks, is that my goal is to help seemingly ordinary people like myself achieve extraordinary results, because each of us has that extraordinary stuff in them. So for today, I'm going to sign off and say thank you for listening today, and I look forward to seeing you next time.